Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, if Holden Caulfield were in my classroom. My guest is Bernie Shine, a legendary Atlanta middle school teacher who's written a book about his extremely unique teaching methods. The book is If Holden Caulfield Were in My Classroom, Inspiring Love, Creativity, and Intelligence in Middle School Kids. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, David. It's good to be here.
You're a controversial educational figure. Explain why and explain what it is you're trying to say in this book.
The main thing I'm trying to say, David, is that school, I hated school when I was a kid.
So you became a teacher.
Exactly. It's why I became a good teacher, not why I just became a teacher. I wanted to give to the kids what I didn't have. What I didn't have was anything that had to do with my interest or my questions, my feelings, my thoughts. It just didn't have anything to do with me. Quite frankly, you know, I mean, I was brought up in the South in the Low Country, but my family was a Jewish family. And when people ask you questions, it was because they didn't know the answer. They didn't ask you questions they did know the answer to. Then I get into first grade. And what I see is, okay, I've got lots of questions. Why does the sun shine? What makes the wind blow? Why do girls sit down to go to the bathroom? That was a new one for me, okay? Why does Paul, when he jumps, he can reach the third rung of the monkey bar, and I fall on my behind? Well, the fact that he's a head taller than me, I'm too little and too young to know that that's the reason. So that's enigmatic to me. Now, I had lots of questions like these. My teacher wasn't interested in any of those questions. She was only interested in her own questions. Now, let me tell you what her question was, okay? We're sitting in a reading group. And the book we're reading in our reading group is The Red Caboose. She says, what color is the caboose? Well, I thought she didn't know the answer. So I pointed to the title, and I said, it's right here. The caboose is red, okay? Then she goes on. She's asking other strange questions that are already in the book that you can just look in the book and find and say, this is the answer. I go back and I sit at my desk. We were in rows back then. And I'm curious and I'm puzzled. And clearly, I don't fit in. So I listen to her with the second and third groups, and she asks them the same question. I go home and I tell my mother that my teacher is stupid and that she has trouble paying attention. And then I learned from this teacher, okay, there's an easy way you can pull this stuff off. You don't really have to listen to teachers too much. You don't really have to pay attention that much. The answers are all over the place. If they're not in the book, then the teacher's going to ask the question 15 times. All you got to do is daydream for a while and hit it on the 15th.
But so let's bring this back to the book and your career. So the lesson you learned from that was, these aren't the best kind of teachers.
No, the lesson, yeah. Well, I don't want to just pick on, teachers are the most wonderful people in the world. They're in a system that's very difficult for them. But what I learned from it is that for the next 12 years, I really didn't get to ask my own questions. And what I also learned is when I became a teacher that, I was talking one time over at North Fulton High School to a group of gifted kids and their teachers. And I got through talking, and this kid in the back, he's a very charming kid, and he raises his hand, he grins, and he says, Mr. Shine, can you expound on the distinguished, prominent nature of Southern literature pre-Margaret Mitchell? Well, of course, I had to step back and give myself room. And I thought about it, and, I looked at him, and I said, what's your name back there? He said, Uri. So I said, Uri, can I ask you a question? Because we're talking about honesty here and so forth, creativity, speaking what you really feel, bursting forth with the truth, if you will. And I said, do you really care about the answer to that question? Well, no. As a matter of fact, I don't. So I said, well, since we're being honest here, can I tell you, because it's not your question, you're a bright kid, I'm sure, but that is a dumb question. And as a teacher, I need to point that out to you. And I said, it's only dumb because you don't have any interest in it. Because you don't, frankly, I don't. So I said, where'd you get it? Where'd it come from? Because it sounds real good. And he looked and he grinned and he said, my teacher gave it to me.
Mm.
So I said, oh. And then I realized he had outsmarted his teacher And he had outsmarted me because his teacher was sitting right next to him.
Mm.
What he didn't realize, this is a student who would score in the statistical stratosphere, David, okay? He's on his way to Yale, Harvard, Princeton, what have you. Terrific probably with research papers and footnotes. He had also outsmarted himself. He did not know his own questions anymore. And what I think happens to these kids is they go through these schools, score well. If they score well, they learn to do what they're supposed to do, and they come out and they've pretty much lost themselves. That's what happened to me when I went to school. And what I want to have happen is I want to bring them back in the classroom. So the question, my question for kids coming into a classroom, the second question would be, what do they need to know? That's very important, okay? Ears to the tracks in anticipation of those truths coming down, all right? But the first question is, who in the heck are they? Who is this child sitting in front of me? How can she come out in every possible way? What can I do to bring her out? Now, that can be stimulated from outside, but it also comes from within. And they bring a lot of wisdom once it comes out to the classroom with them. A lot of great questions.
So, Bernie, you start teaching, you go to Harvard School of Education, you become a principal, and then in kind of a, well, I don't know whether to call it a perfect storm or a perfect situation, you become a teacher at the Paideia School mm-hmm. in the very early days of an right. independent school led by a genius headmaster.
Paul Bianchi,
who we're both big fans of. And you are suddenly in a situation where you really get to put your philosophy to work That's in a right. school that actually allows it to happen. So what did you get to do? What did you do? Your field of battle was the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
What was it that you did with those kids, and what was it that you think should be done across the country?
I've titled the book, If Holden Caulfield Were in My Classroom, because Holden Caulfield, though more negative and cynical than most, to some degree, he represents every pre-early teen and teenager. There is a typicality about him. He courts people he wants to be friends with who he knows are going to reject him. He snubs those that he could be friends with, and he does it because he's scared of being rejected by kids he could be really close and comfortable and strong with.
And he's a smartass.
He's a smartass. He's a virtuoso of the put-down, which I call the teenager's handgun. And he's acting out all over the place. He's failing in school. He's drinking. Now, why? Well, he's been hurt. He lost a brother to cancer. When he did try to express something about that was truthful, he was humiliated. But it's not just that. Let's face it. As a grandparent and a parent, I'm protective. We all are. And we don't want to admit that the kids come to us and they've already been hurt a little bit. Some of that innocence is already gone. The fig leaf is at least awry, if you will, emotionally and socially.
So what do you do?
You have to see them. In other words, you have to know that. You have to know that if they've got a sibling, sibling rivalry can be a great thing because it teaches kids to share, but not if it's not faced. If it's not faced, that kid can grow up resenting one of the parents for years. That relationship can be acted out with her friends. When she writes a story, the story can be blaming because she feels like, well, I wasn't worthy to keep the attention I originally had from my parents. They started giving those songs to my little brother. They started singing those songs to him.
Okay. So, I mean, you've been accused of practicing psychology without a license.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's some truth to that. I mean,
No, I think it's not true at all. I think that I see teaching as an art. The fact is, I think that the institutionalization of feelings is anathema. It's a massacre of emotion, art, and intellect. It's unnatural that in American society, to express those feelings most profoundly intimate, most loving, most tender, most hateful, most hurtful, the ones, in other words, you're most afraid of, you're supposed to go to a doctor and pay for it? That, to me, is really bizarre. They should be expressed and brought out and discovered and explored and plumbed as a natural order of things.
And that's what you did in your classroom.
And that's art. Remember, Freud got it from Sophocles. My kids get it from literature. They get it from creative writing. They get it through talking. And if they don't do this, they can't know themselves and grow. They're going to blame. Are they going to make excuses? Are they going to procrastinate? They're not going to get to the bottom of who they are.
Okay, so let's get concrete. What did you do in your classroom specifically that doesn't happen in other classrooms?
I think the key components is my feeling that emotion drives the boat and reason follows in its wake. how you feel about something and you're, whether or not you're inspired means something. For example, let's say there's a debate that's taking place. Well, a lot of teachers would say, look, it doesn't matter which side you're on, as long as you present it well and logically and strong, and you win, okay? Well, to me, all that matters is which side you're on. And which side you're on must mean a whole lot to you. And if you don't know which side you're on, that's the wrong debate for you, and you need to find the right one for you. And you need to really explore yourself inside, read, talk, and find out what is it that really bothers you? What is it that you have passion about? Then your work will be inspired. Your writing will be elevated a thousandfold. Your reading will be much more perceptive, because you're going to know more about who you are and what you want. And consequently, you'll be more inspired, and your work will. This will also carry over into your relationships. Again, what are your questions as a kid? Now, they don't know. When you walk into a classroom, any classroom in America, and you say, what would you like to learn? The answer is always going to be math, English, history, or science. They don't know what their questions are anymore. And how can they? When the testing is insane. I mean, give me a break.
You're not a fan of No Child Left Behind.
A fan? I think it's disgusting. It's insulting. The idea that somebody is going to measure your intelligence with a multiple choice test, and that, listen, it teaches teachers not to look for the questions from children. It teaches the children they don't have any, that they're going to come from somewhere else. We're not only giving them the questions, we're giving them four answers to choose from. And we have to remember, too, we have to look at the language of kids. They're in a situation now where I've said before, they have felt every emotion an adult has felt by this time. Now, not to the degree, thank God, but to some degree. A death of a pet, the death of a grandparent, the sibling rivalry issue, not being picked for the basketball team, picked last on the softball team, not getting the part they wanted in the school play, maybe not getting a grade, learning disabilities, unrequited love by this time, friendship and betrayal. They've picked on somebody, somebody's picked on them already in their lives.
Maybe some physical or mental abuse of some kind.
Then you have a quarter of the kids that have been abused, neglected, or abandoned, who affect other kids, all right? Now, these kids come to us with all of the great themes of literature and history, jostling for attention inside of them, elbowing their way, trying to get out. And what do? We just let them sit there inside them, and as a result, they act out. Teenagers don't walk up to adults or parents or coaches or teachers and say, hi, I'm screwed up, I love you, I need you, can you help me? They don't do that. They act out. They fail. They get giddy. They become chronically vague. They become a glad hander. Note the kid who always wants to carry your books if you're a teacher doesn't have his homework that day. So the question is, what do you do with these themes, these issues that are inside these kids? Because quite frankly, that's what they're concerned with. You make them great readers. You make them great writers. And you make them great people. The beauty of reading is like listening, except it's better. You can re-listen, and you can get more out of it.
Okay, last question. If you were the Secretary of Education, if you were the czar of American education, what would Bernie Shine do?
I would do two things. The first is I would go back to the Carnegie Report that was very critically acclaimed. It was came out right before No Child Left Behind, and it said basically that if you're in the middle school, should be reserved for emotional, psychological, physical, those elements, because that's what the kids are involved with. Lay off the academic pressure. I disagree with it. I go farther. I say they're right, basically. Deal with them emotionally, socially, and so forth. If you do that, their academics will improve a thousandfold. Emotion, true, inspired emotion, very difficult to arrive at, will catapult creativity and intelligence over 1,000 classrooms and curriculums. Now, having said that, the other thing I would do is I would get rid of every policymaker. No teacher worth their salt would ever come up with something like No Child Left Behind. It's absurd. I would do two things. Get rid of the political correctness. It's awful. And get rid of No Child Left Behind. Get rid of Margaret Spelling. What gets measured, she says, gets done. What I say is what gets done isn't necessarily learning. And I would put teachers in charge of the kids, in charge of the schools, make all bureaucrats and administrators, clerks, accountants, let them handle the money. Teachers should have their eyes on kids. Teachers are fabulous people. Most of them are the most wonderful people in the world. But like, if the kids, schools are prisons for kids, they're prisons for teachers too, 90% of the time.
Bernie Schein, a truly passionate human being and passionate teacher. His book is If Holden Caulfield Were in My Classroom, Inspiring Love, Creativity, and Intelligence in Middle School Kids.